All right. Over
Okay.
to you.
Well, hello, friends. Welcome to this 59th webinar on the Secret Teachings of All Ages by Manly P. Hall. This webinar series is available on makara.us under the subheading Mori Federation Webinars, then Webinar Series in Progress. Previous episodes of this, the Secret Doctrine, and the Treatise on Cosmic Fire series are also available on YouTube. Just do a search for Francis Donald and the webinar you wish to view. You can join any of these webinars on the homepage of MoriFederation.com. Alrighty. During our last session, we began a new chapter entitled The Zodiac and Its Signs, beginning with an analysis of the text beneath the frontispiece of the chapter, which depicts the triune aspects of deity around a central blazing altar representing the three logoi of our solar system. Seven governors or planetary logoi, and on the periphery of the A, quote, 12 aged kings whose thrones are zodiacal constellations. Also depicted is the fixed cross, described by MPH as St. Andrew's cross, upon which the solar man is annually crucified, referring to its incarnated life marked by the solstices and equinoxes, the incarnated life of the solar logos, that is. MPH then compares the three logoi to the mother letters of the Hebrew alphabet, the seven planetary logoi to the double letters, and the 12 constellations to the 12 simple letters. We then took a look at the role astrology played in the ancient world, focusing on the Persians, who, along with the Egyptians, developed astrology to levels never before known, except perhaps in ancient India. Next, we learned about the ancient astronomical observatories, including Yantar Mantar, Raja Jai Singh's Astronomical Observatory, Gao Cheng Astronomical Observatory, Al-Kujandi's mural sextant, the Venus-oriented observatory at Chichen Itza, and the Chanquilo Astronomical Complex in the deserts of Peru, considered to be the oldest solar observatory in the Americas. We then took a look at examples from the Bible where celestial bodies were said to be said to influence events, such as in Joshua 10, verses 12 through 13, which states, "On the day the Lord gave the Amorites over to Israel, Joshua said to the Lord, in the presence of Israel, 'Sun, stand still over Gibeon, and you, moon, over the valley of Ajalon.'" All this was to show how influential the celestial bodies are in the Bible. We then learned that the Chaldean astrology wedded spirituality with numerology. For example, Chaldean astronomers, priests assigned vibrational values to letters based on their sounds which they believed brought to life the spiritual significance of the numbers related to those sounds. These were then used to interpret the influence of celestial bodies on individuals' lives. We then took a look at Egyptian, Chinese, Mesoamerican, and North American zodiacs, as well as ancient astrological treatises. And we considered the etymology of the word zodiac, noting that it is a band of fixed stars about 6 degrees apart, apparently encircling the earth. This was followed by a mini tour of each of the 12 zodiacal signs with an emphasis on the primary stars such as Aldebaran, the Eye of the Bull in Taurus, the twins, Castor and Pollux in Gemini, the Beehive Cluster, also called the Manger in Cancer, Regulus in Leo, Spica in Virgo, Antares in Scorpio, and the Galactic Center in Sagittarius. And this brings us up to where we left off last time. So we'll start by rereading the passage we were studying at the end of our last session. Could we get a reader, please?
I'll start us off. The Greeks and later other peoples, influenced by their culture, divided the band of the zodiac into 12 sections, each being 16 degrees in width and 30 degrees in length. These divisions were called the houses of the zodiac. The sun, during its annual pilgrimage, passed through each of these in turn. Imaginary creatures were traced in the star groups bounded by these rectangles. And because most of them were animal, or part animal in form, they later became known as the constellations or signs of the zodiac. There is a popular theory concerning the origin of the zodiacal creatures to the effect that they were products of the imagination of shepherds who, watching the flocks at night, occupied their minds by tracing the forms of animals and birds in the heavens. This theory is untenable unless the shepherds be regarded as the shepherd priests of antiquity. It is unlikely that the zodiacal signs were derived from the star groups which they now represent. It is far more probable that the creatures assigned to the 12 houses are symbolic of the qualities and intensity of the sun's power while it occupies different parts of the zodiacal belt.
Thanks, BL. Okay, first, the Greeks and later other peoples, influenced by their culture, divided the band of the zodiac into 12 sections, each being 16 degrees in width and 30 degrees in length. These divisions were called the houses of the zodiac. The sun, during its annual pilgrimage, passed through each of these in turn. Imaginary creatures were traced in the star groups bounded by these rectangles, and because most of them were animal or part animal in form, they later became known as the constellations or signs of the zodiac. The root of zodiac is zoo, which is the scientific name for animal, or the prefix that means animal. Anyway, eight of these signs are associated with animals. While Gemini, Virgo, and Aquarius are human, actually Sagittarius is partly human, but started off as the centaur. And the symbol for Libra is the scales. All this is pretty basic stuff, I'm sure that most of you know. But he's going to get into much more detail about it, the zodiac. It's divided into 12 30-degree segments, though, as you can see, some zodiacal constellations are much larger than others. They are arrayed along the ecliptic, a band of stars, which, as MPH points out, is about 16 degrees wide. Okay, next. And by the way, anytime you have any thoughts or comments about anything, just raise your hand. Okay, next, there is a popular theory concerning the origin of the zodiacal creatures to the effect that they were products of the imagination of shepherds who, watching their flocks at night, occupied their minds by tracing the forms of animals and birds in the heavens. This theory is untenable unless the shepherds be regarded as the shepherd priests of antiquity. So the images coming to these priests, who were undoubtedly high initiates, were certainly impressed on them by the hierarchy, for there's nothing random in these zodiacal symbols any more than there is to the names of the constellations. And finally, it's unlikely that the zodiacal signs were derived from the star groups, which they now represent. It is far more probable that the creatures assigned to the 12 houses are symbolic of the qualities and intensity of the sun's power while it occupies different parts of the zodiacal belt. So this is actually a very esoteric statement, suggesting that the potency of the zodiacal symbols, such as the animals, the human signs, and the Libra scales, actually comes from the constellational energies, which are cyclically magnified by the sun, rather than from the shapes of the star groups that are the seeming source of these symbols. Okay, next up. On this subject, Richard, oh, wait a minute. Let's get a reader for this.
Well, Ariane, can you read that for us, please?
Yes, I will try. On this subject, Richard Payne Knight writes, the emblematic meaning which certain animals were employed to signify was only some particular property generalized, and therefore might easily be invented or discovered by the natural operation of the mind. But the collections of stars named after certain animals have no resemblance whatever to those animals, which are therefore merely signs of convention adopted to distinguish certain portions of the heavens, which were probably consecrated to those particular personified attributes which they respectively represented. The symbolical language of ancient art and mythology. Some authorities are of the opinion that the zodiac was originally divided into 10 instead of 12 houses or solar mansions. In early times, there were two separate standards, one solar and the other lunar, used for the measurement of the months, years, and seasons. The solar year was composed of 10 months of 36 days each, and 5 days sacred to the gods. The lunar year consisted of 13 months of 28 days each, with 1 day left over. The solar zodiac at that time consisted of 10 houses of 36 degrees each.
Thank you, Ariane. Okay, so first, so this is actually similar to what we were just looking at, where he basically says that the star patterns don't have anything to do with the animals that they are supposed to represent. Occasionally, you could make some case for the fact that they are similar to the animals, you know, for instance, or the people, like in Gemini, it actually does look like two people, but there are signs where it's, you know, it's a far stretch to try to actually find the animal representation in the stars. So he says the emblematical meaning which certain animals were employed to signify was only some particular property generalized, some quality, right? And there might easily be invented or discovered by the natural operation of the mind, but the collection of stars named after certain animals have no resemblance whatever to those animals. Well, actually, in some cases, there's a bit of a resemblance. So here's the title page of Symbolical Language of Ancient Art and Mythology, published in 1892. Richard Payne Knight says much the same thing that MPH does in the paragraph before, which is that the purpose of the symbols related to each constellation is to personify certain specific attributes that represent the vibrational quality and purpose of the sign itself. Whether or not the star group used to depict a certain zodiacal symbol actually looks like that symbol is, he says, irrelevant, for the potency of the constellation represented by that symbol is nevertheless channeled through that star group. Okay. Next, some authorities are of the opinion that the zodiac was originally divided into 10 instead of 12 houses or solar mansions. So DK confirms this in esoteric astrology and actually in a few places. That can we get a reader for this quote?
Yes. Kirsten, can you read that for us, please?
Yes. In ancient days, as you may perchance have heard, there were only 10 signs, and at that time, Capricorn marked the end of the zodiacal wheel and not Pisces, as it is at this time the case. The two signs of Aquarius and Pisces were not incorporated in the signs for the simple and sufficient reason that humanity could not respond to their peculiar influences. The vehicles of contact and the mechanisms for responses were not adequately developed. Originally, there were 8 signs, then there were 10 and now 12. In Lemurian days, during the early period of animal man and before humanity appeared on Earth, in the interim period of development, 8 signs influenced the planet and the kingdoms of nature found upon it. There was no response to the influences of Leo and Virgo. The mystery of the Sphinx did not exist, and these two signs were not then part of a zodiacal wheel. Then individualization took place, and the seed of Christhood was planted in man. And these two signs began to influence humanity. And gradually that influence was recognized and the zodiac was then known to have 10 signs.
Any thoughts or questions about this? Fascinating teaching. Of course, the constellations were always there, but they weren't recognized simply because humankind was unable to respond to them. Okay, next up. In early times, there were 2 separate standards, one solar and the other lunar, used for the measurement of the months, years, and seasons. The solar year was composed of 10 months of 36 days each and 5 days sacred to the gods. Well, I hate to say it, but MPH is here mistaken. No ancient culture actually used 10 36-day months, possibly in Atlantean times or earlier, but certainly no recorded culture. And we're pretty much aware of the calendar system used by the ancients, but it's possible that, you know, there were 10 36-day months before recorded history, but there's no indication that was in recorded history that this system was ever used. Egypt used a 12-30-day month calendar with 5 added days to honor Osiris, Horus, Set, Isis, and Nephthys. Lunar year calendars, on the other hand, are based on the phases of the moon. A lunar month from one new moon to the next is approximately 29.5 days. Therefore, a lunar year, which consists of 12 lunar months, is about 354 days long. This creates a discrepancy with the solar year, which is why many ancient cultures used what's called a lunisolar calendar to ensure that the lunar months align with the solar year over a cycle of several years. This was achieved by periodically adding an extra or intercalary month. In Mesopotamia, for example, the lunisolar calendar shown here was used, where months were lunar, but years were solar, a system used throughout the Middle East, notably with a notable exception of Egypt and Greece, which used solar calendars. And finally, the lunar year consisted of 13 months of 28 days each, with one day left over. Solar zodiac at the time consisted of 10 houses of 36 degrees each. Actually, again, there's no evidence that the 13-month lunar calendar described here was ever used by the ancients. The Chinese lunar calendar occasionally has 13 months in a year due to the insertion of an extra month known as a leap month to align the lunar calendar with the solar year, but does not use a 28-day structure. So it's unclear where MPH got this information, but there's no evidence that either of these structures existed for calendars. Okay, next up, can we get a reader, please?
Can you read that for us, please? Lynn? Okay, let's try Catherine. Can you read that for us, please? Up, Ben.
Yes.
There you go.
The first 6 signs of the zodiac of 12 signs were regarded as benevolent because the sun occupied them while traversing the northern hemisphere. The 6,000 years during which, according to the Persians, Ahura Mazda ruled his universe in harmony and peace were symbolic of these 6 signs. The second 6 were considered malevolent because while the sun was traveling the southern hemisphere, it was winter with the Greeks, Egyptians, and Persians. Therefore, these 6 months were symbolic of the 6,000 years of misery and suffering caused by the evil genius of the Persians, Ahriman, who sought to overthrow the power of Ahura Mazda. Those who hold the opinion that before its revision by the Greeks, the zodiac consisted of only 10 signs, adduce evidence to show that Libra, the scales, was inserted into the zodiac by dividing the constellation of Virgo, Scorpio, at that time one sign, into 2 parts, thus establishing the balance at the point of equilibrium between the ascending northern and the descending southern signs. See the Rosicrucians, Their Rites and Mysteries by Hargrave Jennings. On this subject, Isaac Meyer states, we think that the zodiacal constellations were first 10 and represented an immense androgenic man or deity. Subsequently, this was changed, resulting in Scorpio and Virgo and making 11. After this, from Scorpio, Libra, the balance was taken, making the present 12, the Kabbalah.
Thank you. Okay, so first, the first six signs of the zodiac of 12 signs were regarded as benevolent because the sun occupied them while traversing the northern hemisphere. So exoterically, these 6 months, beginning with Aries and ending with Virgo, were the time for planting and harvesting and was thus seen as a time of divine benevolence. The vernal equinox, called Nowruz, was the Persian New Year, symbolizing renewal and rebirth. Families would clean their homes, set up a haft scene table. BL, could you take care of that? And engage in various festivities. The term haft scene means seven S's, representing the seven items, each symbolic of a specific virtue. For example, elm represented prudent action and an inclination to reason. And sanjad, the dried fruit of the oleander tree, symbolized familial love. There were also festivals at the summer solstice and fall equinox, the latter a festival of gratitude for Mithra, the Persian god, just before the latter 6 months came, which were considered not to be benevolent. Okay. Next, the 6,000 years during which, according to the Persians, Ahura Mazda ruled his universe in harmony and peace were symbolic of these first six signs. Actually, the Persians recognized a 12,000-year cycle, which they divided into four parts. Could we get a reader for this, please?
Scott, can you read that for us, please?
In ancient Persian cosmology, the concept of a 6,000-year cycle is part of a larger 12,000-year cosmic cycle, described in Zoroastrian tradition. The cycle is divided into four distinct periods, each lasting 3,000 years, and each associated with the zodiacal sign. First 3,000 years, Ahura Mazda, the supreme god, creates the spiritual world and the material world in a state of perfection and harmony. Second 3,000 years, the material world remains in a state of peace and harmony, with Ahura Mazda's creations flourishing. Third 3,000 years, the evil spirit Angra Mainyu, Ahriman, attacks the material world, causing chaos and corruption. This period marks the struggle between good and evil. Fourth 3,000 years, the final battle between good and evil takes place, leading to the eventual triumph of Ahura Mazda and the restoration of the world to its original state of perfection.
Thanks, Scott. Sounds a lot like the yugas of the Hindus, except for that they're much shorter periods of time. But, I can't remember their terms, but the golden period, which lasts the longest, was very similar to this, you know, creation, spiritual world, and this harmonious period between the spiritual and material world. Then there's a silver yuga, which is very much like this, the second 3,000 years, except for it's much more descriptive. There's a lessening of the contact, humans become of smaller stature, don't live as long, but still it's a golden era in that sense. I don't remember the name of the third or what the metal was involved where the the beginning of the separation occurs. But it's very, very much like it, except for that they're enormous periods of time compared to this 3,000 year cycles. Anyway, next, the second six were considered malevolent because while the sun was traveling the southern hemisphere, it was winter with the Greeks, Egyptians, and Persians. Therefore, these 6 months were symbolic of the 6,000 years of misery and suffering caused by the evil genius of the Persians, Ahriman, who sought to overthrow the power of Ahura Mazda. So HPB offers a more esoteric perspective on Ahriman, but I saw Scott's hand go up there.
Yeah, my question or concern, I suppose, is which Persia are we speaking of? What he's speaking of is ancient Persia. What you showed a diagram was from medieval Persia.
Very yeah, that's true. And what we're speaking of is ancient Persia, not medieval Persia, because there's nothing.
That one's medieval.
Yeah, this is medieval. But what he's speaking of here is
ancient.
Ancient, yeah. Just there wasn't, there really isn't much visual. There's not much visual to show from those ancient. There's some sculptures, but there's certainly nothing graphic. So good catch.
Yeah. And we know that the 3,000 years are just symbolic, obviously. Nothing's
obviously. It has to be, doesn't it? It's really, you know, because it adds to 12, you know, you're looking at a cycle, you know, the quarters of a cycle, which then, you know, in fact, all this information is so incredibly exoteric. Unfortunately, there's, except for through HPB, we're about to read a bit of that now on Ahriman. The information tends to be pretty exoteric.
And related more to the seasons, perhaps.
Hmm. Yeah, for sure. You know, you would have to imagine that these great Persian masters, you know, for instance, yes, astrology was tremendously developed during this time, that there would be a much deeper understanding of these four of the four seasons, of the signs in general, but I wasn't able to find it, except for in HPB. She's really the best source for this kind of thing. Thanks, Scott. Can we get a reader for this, please?
Barbara, can you read that for us, please? There we go.
The dualism of the Mazdean religion was born from exoteric interpretation. The holy Ahriman, the bestower of weal, invoked in the prayer called Ahriman Ishi, is the divine aspect of Ahriman. The deadly, the Da of the Davas, and Angra Manu is the dark material aspect of the former. Keep us from the hater, O Mazda, and Armachesventa, Ventita Esta, has as a prayer and invocation an identical meaning with lead us not into temptation, and is addressed by man to the terrible spirit of duality in man himself. For Ahura Mazda is the spiritual, divine, and purified man, and our Metaspenta, the spirit of the earth or materiality, is the same as Ahriman or Angra Manu in one sense. Secret Doctrine 2, 517.
Thank you. Yeah, so, you know, she gives us the esoteric perspective here, you know, that it's very much like in Egypt, where the original gods that were later considered to be evil were actually exponents or came from the Great Bear and were seen as dark because their light was beyond the light that a human being could perceive. You know, it was the actual source of lightness rather than the darkness that they were in the exoteric interpretation came to be seen as. And there are other quotes in, I'm not sure whether I bring them up or not, about Ahriman, which is with the same idea that originally Ahriman was an Asura, meaning, you know, one who is actually the source of the gods, you know. But in so many cultures, they were then quote unquote thrown down or fallen and misinterpreted. Okay, next up. Those who hold the opinion that before its revision by the Greeks, the zodiac consisted of only 10 signs, adduced evidence to show that Libra, the scales, was inserted into the zodiac by dividing the constellation of Virgo Scorpio, at that time one sign, into two parts, thus establishing the balance at the point of equilibrium between the ascending northern and the descending southern signs. And indeed it would do that, but there is no historical evidence of the Greeks or any other ancient culture using only 10 zodiacal signs or deriving their 12 sign system from a previous 10 sign zodiac. But DK does give us two examples of such usage. And of course, their usage far predates the Greek or even the Egyptian systems. So can we get a reader for this, please?
Can you read that for us, please? I don't see him unmuting. Miri, can you read that for us, please?
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
In ancient days, as you may perchance have heard, there were only 10 signs. And at the time, Capricorn marked the end of the zodiacal wheel and not Pisces, as is at this time the case. The two signs of Aquarius and Pisces were not incorporated in the signs for the simple and sufficient reason that humanity could not respond to their peculiar influences. The vehicle of contact and the mechanisms for responses were not adequately developed. Originally, there were 8 signs, Lemuria, then there were 10, Atlantis, and now 12, Esoteric Astrology 159.
Thank you, Mary. And we have this quote also from DK, from Esoteric Astrology. Can we get a reader?
And Veronica, can you read that for us, please?
Yes. There was a time, as you have heard, when there were only 10 signs, and in those ancient days, as in the present time, there was a divergence of opinion among the astrological scientists. They differed as to which the 10 signs might be, and in this connection, there were several schools of thought, but mainly two of importance. One group fused or made one sign out of Leo Virgo and perpetuated the belief in the Sphinx, and the other omitted Gemini and Libra altogether.
Okay, thank you. Again, there's no historical evidence for its claims, but if you trust DK's writings, you could imagine that this came from from a very early time, possibly in this, during this root race, but nonetheless in the earlier subraces. Okay. Next says simply, see the Rosicrucians, their rites and mysteries by Hargrave Jennings. Here's one of the many quotes in this work, citing 10 signs. I actually went through it, did a word search for 10, and there were about a half a dozen references. This is one of them. Could we get a reader, please?
Catherine?
Biel, did you call on me?
Yes, can you please read?
Merepov is 10, or measures or spaces numbered as 10. The whole word means, and the entire object bearing this name means, the original 10 measures or parts of the fiery ecliptic or solar wheel, or the 10 origins of the zodiac.
Thank you. Okay, next up, on this subject, Isaac Meyer states, we think that the zodiacal constellations were first 10 and represented an immense androgenic man or deity. Subsequently, this was changed, resulting into Scorpio and Virgo and making 11. After this, from Scorpio, Libra, the balance was taken, making the present 12. The Kabbalah. So Meyer called this immense androgenic man the upper Adam in his book entitled The Kabbalah, whose parts he associates with the 10 Sephiroth and apparently with the 10 signs of a previous zodiac. Actually, the modern Tree of Life also has a zodiacal and planetary references to the Sephiroth. His statement, quote unquote, subsequently this was changed, resulting in Scorpio and Virgo and making 11, suggests that Scorpio and Virgo were once one sign. Interestingly, DK tells us that in the future, they will merge and become one sign, but that's in a distant future, like in another round. The following phrase, after this, from Scorpio, Libra, the balance was taken, suggests that Libra was also extracted from Scorpio, making Scorpio, at least in Meyer's estimation, the source of both Virgo and Libra. Before continuing with the next paragraph, which will take us to the next page in the folio edition, let's take a look at the two illustrations on this page. First, we have a chart showing the relationship between the human body and the exterior universe. Could we get a reader for the text beneath the illustration?
Yes. Marguerite, can you read that for us, please?
Yes. Chart showing the relationship between the human body and the exterior universe. The ornamental border contains groups of names of animal, mineral, and vegetable substances. Their relationship is corresponding parts of the human body is shown by the dotted lines. The words in capital letters on the dotted lines indicate to what corporeal member, organ or disease, the herb or other substance is related. The favorable positions in relation to the time of year are shown by the signs of the zodiac, each house of which is divided by crosses into its three deacons. This influence is further emphasized by the series of planetary signs placed on either side of the figure.
Thank you. So first, the ornamental border contains groups of names of animals, mineral, and vegetable substances. So here's a close-up of the ornamental border that that depicts the names of animal, mineral, and vegetable substances that have a particular tonic effect on the parts of the body indicated by the dotted lines. For example, Yuglan here is a walnut tree, and the skia or squia is a type of flowering plant. Actually, this it's Peonia Yuglan, and so period, and so there's actually two plants described here, and they're the next up he says their relationship to corresponding parts of the human body is shown by the dotted lines. The words in capital letters on the dotted lines indicate to what corporeal member, organ, or disease the herb or other substance is related. So in this example, the dotted line entitled Ad Caput indicates that both the flower from a walnut tree and the flowering plant Deschia or Deschia have a tonic effect on the head. So a pretty cool chart all in all. One presented in the text, shown here, well, actually the one presented in the text, this is, I got from the original manuscript, and it was way, way more detailed than one in the text. You couldn't read any of these designations, but you can find this text online. And so I was able to lift it from that. Okay, next up.
Frances?
Yeah.
I just want to say that Ariane says she would like to ask a question, but this new format disallows this. Can't you raise your hand, Ariane?
No.
What?
It doesn't have an option for that. On my iPhone, it doesn't have any.
Oh gosh.
Menu bar.
It must be your iPhone, because Scott was able to raise his hand earlier, so.
I wonder if they use some kind of abbreviated toolbar on iPhones. You know what, Ariane? Just speak up. When you want to say something, just say, excuse me. We may not call on you that instant, but we'll know then. That'll be the verbal equivalent of raising your hand, okay? And don't, that of course obviously goes for anybody else having this problem. If you can raise your hand, it's a better way to do it, because we can process it, you know, two or three people at a time. But if you can't, just speak up, okay?
Okay, can you hear me? Yeah, I'm gonna just.
Yes, go ahead.
First of all, thank you for your generosity and welcoming diverse viewpoints on. I'll just use the chat first. BL's an expert in, you know, pivoting, and I just prefer the intentionality, and I'll just, if I need to raise my hand, I'll use the chat, but thank you. One comment, and then the comment is, you know, in the Middle Ages, at least in Europe, they understood commonly about the humors and the body types and how it related to planets. And for those of us who've studied that kind of stuff, and we know immediately within 1 or 2 minutes, the body type of someone, anyone we can see a picture of or interact with, and we know their faults and their strengths as associated with the planets and the astrological energies pouring into the way even their body looks is largely a function of, for instance, the planets. Like I'm a Venus, Mercury, Solar, so that affects very much the way I look, my strengths and my weaknesses, as all the different astrological types do. And it was just very common knowledge, not only among doctors and in medicine, but among Roman people in the Middle Ages. So that's the first point. I have a question, though. You mentioned earlier on about light and that the constellations were distinguished or delineated by the amount of light from the sun that's shown in each one of them. Could you explain that? Because I don't really understand.
In this webinar?
Yes, you did. Maybe it was a reading, if anyone. Oh, I'm so sorry, but that was very intriguing to me. That the constellations have more to do with the solar light reaching each of them than other particular
qualities. Oh, yeah. Okay. The point that was made is actually a fairly simple one, which is that the stars that were then named after, eight animals and three human figures and the scales, that those stars involved in those constellations, which often are part of a much greater body of stars, the seven stars of the Pleiades, for instance, is just there's literally thousands of, it's a star field in the Pleiades. But anyway, that they represent the energy or the light of that constellation. They are the proponents, you could say, the transmitters of the light of the constellation. Irrespective of the symbols that have been attached to those stars, but that those symbols do in fact give a hint as to the nature of that light, even though often if you look at the stars that represent a particular animal in a constellation, they don't actually represent that animal. I think that's what you were thinking about. It's not a very developed theme in this work, which is, it's just that the idea being that that the signs, you could say, the symbols represented by the signs are actually the emissaries for the light that streams from the constellations which those signs represent, and that that light or that energy is of a specific nature. Yeah, I guess that's what you're talking about, because I can't think of any other. You may have read more into it than is there. Okay, anyone else? Okay. So, next. Here we are. The favorable position in relation to the time of year are shown by the signs of the zodiac, each house of which is divided by crosses into three decans. Here you see the Sagittarian symbol and the crosses marking the three decans, which are, this is like half freehand, this chart is. It's not at all geometrically exact, but the concept of the three decans are indicated, even if not the exact position, by these little X's or crosses. Finally, this influence is further emphasized by the series of planetary signs placed on either side of the figure shown here. The planets are depicted in order at the length of their orbits, which is something they did in ancient times, beginning with the moon on the inside. It doesn't even show on this side, but here, and ending with Saturn, like I said, in accordance with the length of time of the orbit. Okay, any thoughts or questions about this illustration? Okay, next up, the little chart at the bottom of the page depicts the Earth's equator and the ecliptic with the 12 signs. The text reads, The planet's zodiac intersects the celestial equator at an angle of approximately 23 degrees 28 minutes. The two points of intersection A and B are called the equinoxes. So modern astronomers put the angle at 23 degrees 44 minutes. It's actually very, very close to what was known then in the early part of the last century. Okay, next up, could we get a reader, please?
Can you read that for us? I think we tried him earlier and didn't get him.
Yeah, let me see.
There we go.
Good, good.
Can you hear? Okay. Each year, the sun passes entirely around the zodiac and returns to the point from which it started, the vernal equinox. And each year, it falls just a little short of making the complete circle of the heavens in the allotted period of time. As a result, it crosses the equator just a little behind the spot in the zodiacal sign where it is crossed the previous year, where it crossed the previous year. Each sign of the zodiac consists of 30 degrees, and as the sun loses about 1 degree every 72 years, it regresses through one entire constellation or sign in approximately 2,160 years, and through the entire zodiac in about 25,920 years. Authorities disagree concerning these figures. This retrograde motion is called the precession of the equinoxes. This means that in the course of about 25,920 years, which constitute one great solar or platonic year, each one of the 12 constellations occupies position at the vernal equinox form, nearly 2,160 years, then gives place to the previous sign. Among the ancients, the sun was always symbolized by the figure and nature of the constellation through which it passed the vernal equinox. For nearly the past 2,000 years, the sun has crossed the equator, the vernal equinox, in the constellation of Pisces, the two fishes, for the 2,160 years before that, it crossed through the constellation of Aries, the ram. Prior to that, the vernal equinox was in the sign of Taurus, the bull. It's probable that the form of the bull and the bull's proclivities were assigned to this constellation because the bull was used by the ancients to plow the fields, and the season set aside for plowing and furrowing corresponded to the time at which the sun reached the segment of the heavens named Taurus.
Thank you, Tom. Okay, first, each year the sun passes entirely around the zodiac and returns to the point from which it started, the vernal equinox. And each year it falls just a little short of making the complete circle of the heavens in the allotted period of time. As a result, it crosses the equator just a little bit behind the spot in the zodiacal sign where it crossed the previous year. So the sun's relative position to the zodiac slips just less than a minute of arc every year. More precisely, the positions of the equinoxes, the points where the celestial equator intersects the ecliptic, drift westward along the ecliptic at a rate of about 50.4 arc seconds. That's less than 1 minute, and there's 60 minutes in a degree, 50.4 arc seconds per year. The position of the sun on the day of the vernal equinox is presently in the constellation of Pisces, see it here, near the border of Aquarius. Modern star maps have the equinox entering Aquarius in about 600 years. That decay tells us that we will be in the age of Aquarius in the year 2117. That's not printed in the blue books, but was in a letter, I believe, to AAB, I don't know for sure. The position of the sun on the day of the vernal equinox is presently in the constellation of Pisces. I reread that. Okay, so next up, can we get each sign of the zodiac consists of 30 degrees, and as the sun loses about 1 degree every 72 years, it regresses through one entire constellation or sign in approximately 2,160 years and through the entire zodiac in about 25,920 years. Authorities disagree concerning these figures. So modern estimates suggest that the sun loses 1 degree every 71 years, not 72, and put the Platonic year closer to 25,750 years rather than 920. They can't nail this down because there's elements of the changing gravity that happens between the sun and the earth during the precessional equinoxes that prevents them to be, at least in all the references where I tried to nail this down, they said that it can't be exactly pinpointed in terms of the length of a Platonic year. So the blue lines in this illustration show the 30 degree divisions of the zodiac. Next, this retrograde motion is called the precession of the equinoxes. This means that in the course of about 25,920 years, which constitute one great solar or Platonic year, each one of the 12 constellations occupies a position at the vernal equinox for nearly 2,160 years, then gives place to the previous sign. So, you know, I already talked about these figures not being quite the same. Considered 2750 is the period generally considered to be a Platonic year now. And so that would lop off a bit of time from each of these ages. DK tells us that the precession of the equinoxes moving backward through the signs is responsible for man's non-reversed clockwise movement through the signs until such time that he or she reverses his or herself on the wheel of life and begins to move counterclockwise through the signs. This is something that comes up in the esoteric astrology section on Virgo. He tells us this. This is the reason that this clockwise precession of the equinoxes movement is what's responsible for the clockwise movement of humanity through the signs until there's a reversal on the wheel. I thought that was quite interesting. Okay, and then finally, among the ancients, the sun was always symbolized by the figure and nature of the constellation through which it passed at the vernal equinox. For nearly the past 2,000 years, the sun has crossed the equator at the vernal equinox in the constellation of Pisces. For the 2,160 years before that, he crossed to the constellation of Aries, the ram. Prior to that, the vernal equinox was at the sign of Taurus, the bull. It is probable that the form of the bull and the bull's proclivities were assigned to this constellation because the bull was used by the ancients to plow the fields and the season set aside for plowing and furrowing corresponded to the time at which the sun reached the segment of the heavens named Taurus. This is obviously exoteric explanation. The ancients were fully aware of the connection between Taurus and the bull. So let's take a closer look at the three ages here described. This passage from Alice Bailey's unfinished biography chronicles the appearance of the fish symbology during the Piscean Age. Could we get a reader, please?
Okay, I'm reading some comments here, and Magda, I'm going to ask you to read, but first let me read your comment, okay? If Lemieux had 8 zodiacal signs, Atlantis 10, and Arian 12, does that mean, thank our current race cycle last 2,000 years, 3,000 for each gold, silver, bronze, and iron, but in those older times was shorter? And then she says in those other times. So please explain.
Yes. If I understand correctly, on Lemu race, there were 8 zodiacal sign governing all the our system. On Atlantis, just 10. And on our race, Aryan race, 12. So does that mean, since our Aryan race, we know that the last 12,000 years, 3,000 years for each age, gold, silver, bronze, and iron. So I assume, I deduce from this that on Lemu, there were 8,000 years of globe cycle, and on Atlantis, 10,000 years. So our age, 3,000 by 4 times, meaning that Christ, Zarathustra, Zoroaster, came for the first time in our new time, in our new race, okay, after the Atlantean disaster. And after 6,000 years, the 6 months corresponding to the 6,000 years of the first phase of our globe cycle were under the Ahura Mazda, which has another name, which now I don't remember, Karman, Vishvu Karman, which is the god, the high god. So after 6,000 years, it was night, after the spring and the summer, was night. So it was Christ, another high entity, had to come because it was corrupted, the past, the Zoroaster thing, but Christ contained in himself Zoroaster philosophy and essence. So I don't remember when Steiner said about Christ. I don't remember if before or after the baptism, but he went to Persia and met with Ahura, with the decayed god, okay, so to say. He proclaimed a new father, a new prayer for our father, the god. And there was the point where it all merged, and he could... when Steiner said that the Golgotha mysteries are the most important event in our era, it's because by his coming, he gave humanity a new non-corrupted, the new six constellations, so to say, the new 6 signs, and a new way of initiation, because from that time on, very slowly, everybody would have come to get the Damasco initiation, the St. Paul initiation. So basically, my question is, my speculation is that on Lemu was 8,000 years and on Atlantis 10,000 years, meaning on each race it changes the zodiacal signs. And I'm very ignorant in astrology, but this I deduct from the schemes of the 3 by 4 years.
Okay, as Scott and I were discussing, these cycled number of years of these cycles are completely, they're complete blinds. It's like they're symbolical. They represent a completion of a cycle, the 12 does, right? And I think there is something to the idea that during the Atlantean time, because I remember reading about this, I think it was an externalization of the hierarchy, that the 10 was the revered number, and it dominated the form of measurement for the Atlanteans, and that was why there was an error in the dimensions of Atlantis, the great city, that actually led to its destruction. Now, this is now a little bit vague, my memory on this, but that I'll just say one thing I do remember is that in the same way that the Aryan race is based on a 12 form system, of course, you know, it's not completely true. We have the decimal system and 10 rules in so many ways, but the idea of the 12 fold was introduced in that way. There was an orientation towards the 10 at Atlantis, but if whether or not that would have determined the nature of their cycles, you know, it's possible, but it wouldn't have determined the length of an entire cycle, because these years, as you, for instance, as you indicate in the chat, and we discussed on that quote from Mesopotamia about Ahura Mazda, you know, the first 3,000, second 3,000, etc. Those are, as Scott pointed out, those are complete blinds for much, much longer periods of time, as is recognized by the Hindu and is published. That information is published, and it's millions and millions of years that these yugas last, right? And that we're in the Kali Yuga now, which according to some will end, ready for this, in 2025. So, and that's from, not from theosophical sources, that's from some Hindu sources, which is a fascinating
Because there is a debate, I think, on what you're saying about the 1,000 years, or if there are 1,000,000 years. This is like a, yeah. I personally think it's mischievous following dates, but if I have to follow them, I rather stick with a few 1,000 years. It's not the millions lasting years. From what I deduce. But anyway, this tenfold thing that was going on in Atlantis, and you mentioned that caused some kind of problem. I understand that it's not a matter of number of years. This I understand. Thank you. And it's a matter of a form code, so to say. And that caused a problem, that tenfold code. And in what can you remember, is it related, this kind of problem that emerged from this tenfold code?
It had to do with them reversing the use of the number that determined the diameter of a circle and the number that determines the circumference, and they reversed their usage, and that created this fatal flaw. But it's been years since I.
Is this in secret doctrine?
Let me think.
Or when, you know, later on, you can send me a link if you find it.
We looked at this in depth during the Secret Teachings of All Ages segment on Atlantis. Even this, what we're talking about now, I'm remembering that now. We actually, this was considered, and it came from a number of sources, including the externalization of the hierarchy, where DK talks quite a bit about Atlantis. So, you know, many pages worth of information there. And yes, there are some quotes from the sacred doctrine, but not the ones I'm talking about connected with the 10, I don't believe. But
maybe many people.
Manly wouldn't have gone this deep with it, but as a result of his consideration of Atlantis, I mean, you know, basically, often we use Manly as a kind of table of contents, or, you know, a to then explore the ideas that he presents. And that's what we did during the session on Atlantis, which was now a few years ago. So,
Francis, thank you. And so yeah. 2025 is the date. Okay.
Okay. Hold on just 1 minute before.
Go ahead, Beale.
All right. Answer her question about the date, and then please don't start reading yet, Mega.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Oh, that was just one. There was one group of Hindu experts that thought it would end. It's not a, there's not a consensus on the Kali Yuga ending in 2025, but there was a group that felt that it was going to end then. What I thought was significant is that this group didn't have anything to do with DK or, you know, with theosophy in general, which of course has, that the 2025 conclave is wherein the 2025 conclave is so important. So that was my point with that. Yeah.
Okay. And then Ariane has a comment. Please go ahead, Ariane.
Yeah, I have four comments. I'll try to be clear. First of all, in the last 200 pages of the Externalization of Hierarchy by Ellis Bailey, he delineates DK very precisely. What is the order of events planned with the emergence and over the next years? And 2025 is delineated as an important date. It's not just from the Hindus that this is a turning point, because it's when the hierarchy meets and reevaluates the progress humanity has made. But also, all these things are really clearly discussed. It's a very beautiful and breathtaking 200 pages I encourage everyone to read. So I just want to make a few more comments. One about 10, 10. You know, it's an extraordinary number in terms of the decimal system and what it allows for, but it shows the individualism and the narcissism that's associated with Pisces, because you have 1 and 0. And when you think about 12, you have the beginning of a relationship too, and even the Trinity, 1, 2, 3. And so when we think of the changes in consciousness that humanity is undergoing, when our solar system lines up with a different constellation, and that we are bathed in different rays, like for instance, the 7th ray that's coming into the age of the Aquarius, which has already started, we can see that all of us benefit from the 7th ray of ceremonial magic, or the capacity to be more organized. I see it in myself, because I'm not a particularly organized person, and it's a real lot of suffering for me because it's so inefficient. But I can see, even over the last 3 years, that I've had a lot of help with that, and that I can think about it more deeply about how to be more organized and what that means practically in my spiritual life, or how I want to help humanity. Now, in terms of the change from one constellation to another, 1745 was given as a point in time, and these constellations do not have a strict line when you move from Pisces to Aquarius. That 1745, during the Age of Enlightenment, when humanity's intellect was quickened, was a time, a milestone, in which we started to move into the Age of Aquarius. And according to one of my teachers, Benjamin Krem, we are fully in the Age of Aquarius now. And in fact, Sai Baba said that in 1994, humanity had a very serious test, but that we passed it, and we could have been exterminated then in 1994. I don't know what he was referring to. And then lastly, I just want to talk about the practicality of these constellations and astrology in relationship to us listening today as individuals. So when we talk about initiation, and that we are, when we know what initiation is, for example, the first initiation being involved with mastering the body, the lower form, the coarsest part of ourselves, which are the appetites, not only, what we put in our mouth, but our sexuality and such, and not in a moralistic way, because all those experiences are part of art and learning to experience life deeply, but that they're not ruling us, that we are directing those energies and sublimating them and experiencing them consciously and through the arts or through intimate relationships or however we choose, maybe by sacrificing ourselves towards the good of humanity. All that energy is what Freud says is sexual. But when we think about initiation, most of humanity is just at 0.3 degrees initiation, which is very low, unfortunately. And that's why we see such a troubled world. And when we know that the planets bear down heavily on us with their energies, and that certain planets, like Uranus, awaken through disruption or through incredible technology entering into the military field, which has the power to kill and also to kill all life on this planet like never before, we understand what we need to resist and how we need to redirect our energies. When we're more evolved spiritually, or we're a high degree in the initiatory trajectory, say we're a first degree, because very, very few people reach a second degree, but say some of us here are first degree or a little bit more or less or whatever, which is important. And maybe some of us are second degree or whatever, that would be incredible. That we understand the influences of astrology. We want to study it not only as a metaphorical or theoretical activity, but it's actually a science. And we want to educate people about the importance of resisting being activated mechanically by energies, and also conflictual energies between planets. So we know, for instance, in the U.S., for those of us here who are from the U.S., that when Uranus has entered Gemini in the U.S.'s astrological chart, its birth chart, which occurred in Philadelphia around 5 o'clock on July 4th, 1776, that's the astrological chart of the U.S., that Uranus entered Gemini, and that's where it's entering very soon. And at that time, we had the Revolutionary War, which is really a war over slavery. I can't go into that. We had the Civil War, and then we had our entrance into World War II. All that occurred when Uranus entered Gemini. So we want to think about these things, talk about these things, educate people about the importance of peace at all price, and that we have something, how we language that, people who don't really think about these things in the same way as we do because they couldn't relate to them, would be up to each one of us.
Thank you, Ariane. Way too much there for me to directly address, but there's some very interesting concepts that you brought forth. Thank you. Okay, could we get a reader for this, please?
That would be Magda, please.
Yeah. This becomes still more apparent when the sun transited into the next constellation, the sign of Pisces, the fishes. Then we had the appearance of Christ and symbology, which runs so characteristically through the entire gospel story. His disciples were largely fishermen. He performed the miracles with fishes and sent his apostles out after his death under the leadership of Saint Peter with injunctions to be fishers of men. It is for this reason that the mitre, which the Pope wears, is the mouth of the fish.
Okay. Were you going to say something?
It's interesting for me to see how the sign fish, you know, the animal fish relates to Christ the fish, and the fishermen gotta, you know, go and fish out for our souls, and you know, the mouth, the open mouth of the Pope, and then the open mouth of the whale, which is an esoteric symbol.
Yeah,
it's because I'm ignorant. Astrology is surprising. This the fish, people, the fish.
Well, you won't be ignorant after this, because DK tells us here much about the meaning of the about the fish. So, and this meaning lies at the root of the fish symbolism in Pisces. It's not a complete description, but it is sufficient to have an understanding. Could we get a reader, please?
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let me read that. Hold on just 1 minute here. I was looking for something. In the first cycle of experience upon the wheel, the soul itself is in captivity to substance. It has come down into the prison house of matter and linked itself to form. Hence the symbol of crises, the two fishes linked together by a bond. One fish stands for the soul and the other for the personality or form. Form nature, and between them is to be found the thread or sutratma, the silver cord which keeps them bound to each other throughout the cycle of manifested life. Later on, upon the reversed wheel, the personality is brought into captivity by the soul, but for long eons the situation is reversed, and the soul is the prisoner of the personality. This dual bondage is brought to an end by what is called the final death, when the complete release of the life aspect from the form, from the life of form, takes place.
Thank you, BL. Okay, the Aryan Age, which came immediately before the Piscean Age, was characterized by symbols of the ram, for example, Khnum. The Egyptian creator god was depicted as a man with a ram's head. He's actually a potter. Even Osiris was occasionally pictured with ram's horns. Again, Duquet gives more insight into the esoteric meaning of the ram. And we'll read this, and that'll be it for today. Can we get a reader, please?
Okay. Scott, can you read that for us, please?
Sure. Aries, the downturned horns of the ram, signifying the coming into manifestation, the involutionary cycle, and the experience of the cardinal cross as it expresses the will to manifest of God. The ram leads us into the creative life of earth and into the darkness of matter. This is the blue of midnight. Eventually, the ram becomes the scapegoat, and the will of God in love and salvage is demonstrated.
Thank you, Scott. Okay, could you give us dates for what's coming up? BL?
Yes. Okay, the very next thing that we've got coming up is this Thursday, 9 August, and that's the Treatise of Cosmic Fire.
Friday.
And then the Secret Doctrine will be on the 25th of August, and that's out of cycle. We normally do them the third Sunday, but it has a conflict with the pre-full moon and something else going on. So we had to move it to the 25th of August. And then the next Secret Teaching of All Ages, this particular one, will be on the 1st of September.
Okay, so the main thing is, see, this Friday we have the Treatise on Cosmic Fire, and then watch out for that forward shift for the Secret Doctrine, which instead of the 18th will be the 25th. Otherwise, it's pretty much as usual. So, okay, you all, thank you very much for showing up. We'll see you next time.
Thank you so much, really.
You're very welcome.